jury. The prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for today. It is Monday, December 28th, 2015. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios located in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. That's right, Northwest Pennsylvania, not Southeast Florida, Southwest Florida, where, you know, it'd be nice, tropical area, or Costa Rica or something. No, we're coming to you right here in from FEMA Region 3, I believe it is. It's cool because, folks, we're going to put a camera on Eric because Eric the tech, okay? He's got like a space station there where he does the stuff from.
Yeah, can we have control of when that goes on too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But I got to tell you, see, what's great about this is like, if you've ever been a guest on like one of the news shows, whether it's a, what would you call it, local, like a Buffalo Channel 7, or if you've ever been a guest on like Fox or whatever, when you're sitting there, there are people behind the cameras and people sitting in the little booths and stuff, and it's kind of fun to watch, and there's always somebody that gives you a countdown, 3, 2, 1, and then, you know, it points to the host. That's Eric. He's got his numbers down. Tomorrow we're going to be working on the alphabet, right? Anyway. Yeah. You could tell this is a holiday week, right?
Definitely.
What's in the eggnog? I don't know. Folks, we broadcast live every Monday through Friday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time on the Global Star Radio Network. That's a radio network. That's the place to be. That's a place to tune your computer to. It's Global Star Radio Network. I owe them a lot. I mean, you talk about some great shows. My goodness, Dave Hodges and Ted Brewer and us, despite us. Let's see, Russ Dizdar, right before us. We were listening to Russ right before showtime. Anyway, we're also simulcast on Blog Talk Radio, and you can watch us live on YouTube. Just go to HagmanHagman.com, click on the link to YouTube, and there you'll find all of our venues, audio venues, on HagmanAndHagman.com. Now, I'm Doug Hagman at the helm with film investigative researcher, and most importantly, my son, Joe Hagman. To my right, we are the Hagman and Hagman Report, what I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. Folks, we do dig into topics that the mass media, Illuminati-controlled mass media, won't, never will. And many people adhere to the coincidence theory of historical and current geopolitical events. We don't. What did I just say? Coincidence theory. Did I say coincidence theory? We look at the conspiratorial aspect of things. Sometimes, you know, these phrases get stuck in your head, and by memory, it just, of course, when you get old like me and wrinkled, right? All right. Glad to have you with us here tonight, folks. Give me a little bit of advance notice this week, schedule wise. A lot of things have happened over the last couple of days. I've got to tell you. We are going to take Thursday and Friday off, the 31st and 1st off. This is going to be first in 4 years. We're going to do that. There are things that I've got to catch up on, Joe's got to catch up on in research, also in writing. There's some things going on in the background investigation-wise that we want to bring forth after the first of the year, after the holiday.
Yeah,
I don't want to get into it. It's nothing, you know, that anyone's going to get killed over, but
people.
Yes.
When we take the weekend break, you know, you get 2 days off, and that seems to just go by so fast. Hopefully, this little 4 day, time off will give us an opportunity to get done everything that we want to, and possibly more.
Yeah, and we have, folks, we've got big plans for 2016. Of course, you know, we plan, God laughs, right?
Yep.
So, it's really, we are looking at whatever God wants us to do. We pray. If you can believe that, we do pray. And we listen. And we try to be obedient as best we can. I was talking to Steve Quayle today, and I do just about every day. And I was saying, you know, when God selected us for this platform, boy, you know, he has a sense of humor. He really does. Because, and I told him, I said, man, you know, I cannot finish a thought or don't finish a thought, and it drives people mad. I cut Joe off mid-sentence, and that drives people absolutely crazy. I know I do these things. I stutter when I get on a roll. I remember one time, Joe, were you with me? No, maybe it wasn't you that was. I was on WBEN in Buffalo, Tom Barley, and this is right after the Fort Dix 6 incident.
Were you in studio?
No, I was in New York City. I was just outside of New York City.
And I might have been with you.
In the parking lot, right. And I kept, okay, and we were talking about the Fort Dix 6. Do you remember this? Were you with me?
Yeah, we were in Long Island.
Okay. We weren't actually in Long Island. We were on Long Island, yeah. You know. Just like, you know, park your car in your driveway. You park it on your driveway. If you park it in your driveway, you might have some insurance issues. But I kept saying Fort Six Dix. Okay, remember that? I mean, I was on a roll, yeah. Man. And I was, you know, yipping and yammering. And I kept saying Fort Six Dix. Now, folks, I didn't say that. Trust me, I didn't say that. In the way that maybe some people might think that, okay, it was Fort Dix 6. But it was Fort Six Dix. And again, it has nothing to do with profanity. It has nothing, so don't even go there. It was just the twisting of words. And Tom didn't, I was like Steve Quayle, you know, Tom couldn't get a word in edgewise. And, at the break, he said, you know what you were saying, right? No, you know, I had no clue. Well, that's what I was saying. So it was really hilarious. And when they played it back for me because the producer there has a great sense of humor, and they played it back for me, and even the station manager was laughing, and he said, man, you know, are we going to get the complaint letters? Now, I don't know if they did or not, but it was funny. So that's one of the things. So I stutter, interrupt, I massacre things, and so God does have I don't know what God was thinking when he put us here. And the other thing too is we're going to hopefully, or at least I'm going to work on my faults, but you know, I'm going to do my best to work on my faults. Hopefully you'll stick with us, but I think you're going to see some good things, God willing, and I say that literally. God willing, for 2016. What do you think?
I think we all have things to work on.
All right.
I don't know if we'll be able to get them fixed, but taking time to sit back and try a different way always is a good beginning, good start.
Yeah. I'm going to show you this. See, we're not broadcasting yet so far this year in high definition. Although it's good definition, it's just not high definition. And I don't know what I don't know what all those pixels mean, but see this? My wife, this is my Christmas present.
That's nice.
You didn't see it, did you?
Uh-uh.
I was in the green room. Yeah, see, this is a tie with doggies on it. That's my Christmas present. So, anyway. All right. We got a lot of news to get into, a lot of good information. I'll schedule this week, tonight, news, analysis of the current events as they relate to things taking place, and then calls, the second half of the show. Tomorrow night, last hour, Stan Dale, first and 2 hours, news analysis.
Go Curtis ahead. Is going to be on tomorrow.
Right.
From 7 to 7:30.
Correct. Just to give us an update on what he's doing. Of course, Brother Marcus Samuel from the Indian Reservation passed away. You know that, folks. Okay. Suddenly.
That was a heart attack. About 3 months ago? 2-3 months ago.
I think it might have been a little longer than that.
Yeah.
But it was during the summer. And Wednesday, now this was a, we had talked about going over your predictions. Remember last year we did a show on predictions? We had talked about doing it, and it got conflated with Christmas Day. And we apologize for that. We're going to do a show on the predictions based on reason speculation from our listeners on Wednesday. So if you called in last year or sent in emails last year from that show we did, since Wednesday is going to be our last airable date for the year, we're going to go over the entirety of the predictions. So, that's going to be fun, to get into that. And also we're going to be taking your predictions for 2016 on Wednesday. What do you think? Should we?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot out there.
Yeah. All right. All right. Good.
A lot going on.
And, yeah. Yeah. So, what else do we want to say? We probably should, like, do show prep and write this stuff down, right? Well, now you're going to see some big changes in 2016. Before we start the show, can I have a moment, or is this?
Sure.
All right.
I'm still trying to find my notes from over the weekend for today.
It's one thing. I'm going to... We're going to... I should show you the notes, the area of the notes we take, because it's the notes are voluminous. And we keep the show notes, and we keep the notes that are important to us. And the number of file cabinets worth of notes is just incredible. But got an email this weekend from a woman. I don't have the email at the ready here. And I'm not going to address her concerns specifically, but she was asking, about Nazi Germany. Okay. And I know you folks, I've got an email saying, oh, I'm sick of you talking about Nazi Germany, for crying out loud. When are you going to stop? It's nothing to do with what we're seeing right now. My goodness. Well, it does. It does. And I'm going to cite heavily from the book When a Nation Forgets God, because I think that's exactly where we find ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I'm only going to take a few, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes on this, but I think Erwin Lutzer, who wrote the book When a Nation Forgets God, I think it's important. He makes some very important points. And I'm not going to read. I'm going to just cherry pick and paraphrase. So, again, here's the book. It's a quick read, When a Nation Forgets God, by Erwin Lutzer. Erwin W. Lutzer. I wanted to make sure I was pronouncing that or had that name right. It's 7 Lessons We Must Learn from Nazi Germany. This was written back, I think it was, when was this?
No, it's an older book.
82. Yeah. Or no, I'm sorry. No. It was written in, my goodness. I don't know. 2010 is a copyright date. All right, so. But nonetheless, he writes this. He says, you know, I'm deeply distressed about the direction our nation is taking, but I'm even more concerned about how the church and the people of God will react to what is taking place. Wow. Think about that for a moment. That sentence alone. You know, you've got this, the Christians, who we see, Joe, are devouring each other. You've got Christians who are confrontational with each other. You've got Christians who believe only in what they, in a very narrow, they're very narrow-minded. Now, it's good to be narrow-minded, and it's good to be scripturally based. But even to the extent of, for example, a discussion about, oh, I don't know, whatever, you know, oh, you shouldn't have that discussion. Chris Putnam, Christians who are many Christians who talk about the origins of Christmas, Chris Putnam had a really good article. I don't know whether you got a chance to see it. He talked about, he rebutted the pagan origins of Christmas. Okay, now we all know the pagan traditions of Christmas. Now, you have to be very careful with wordings, but nonetheless, it's a good article. And but see, even some Christians will say, well, if you celebrate Christmas, or if you, you know, you're that's heresy. So, but I'm more worried, as Erwin Lutzer writes, he said, I'm deeply distressed over the direction the nation is taking, but I'm even more concerned about how the church, the people of God, will react to what is taking place. To become angry, vindictive, and filled with self-pity is hardly what God expects of us. We must respond on many different levels, but surely one of the most important is that we as individuals and the church at large must bear a credible witness to the saving grace of God in Christ. God is humbling us, he writes. The political solutions that we thought would rescue us, rescue our nation from its moral and spiritual morass, or this free fall that we're seeing, no, scant effect, if at all. We are learning that the problem is deeper than we thought, that the solution itself must be deeper also. In sum, we must realize that only God can save us from these trends that have already evoked his judgment. And I'm looking more and more at the storms in Texas and some of the things that we're seeing today, and matching those up with God's judgment in a way. And people might think that that's too conspiratorial, but I don't think so. But I think judgment, Dr. Michael Lake talks about spot judgments. Remember that clip we played? Mm-hmm. And he talks about judgments. And of course, John McTernan talks about judgments. And I think God is about ready to, well, I think we're seeing just the start of God's judgments on us. And I'm going to quickly go over this, and I'm going to hand it over to you, Joe, for the news that you want to hit. You know, Nazi Germany itself has some lessons to teach us, and Lutzer writes that he's aware, of course, that parallels between Nazi Germany and the United States can easily be overdrawn, but this danger should not stop us from learning some hard lessons from the dark period when the church struggled to find its identity, had to suffer for what it believed. You might be surprised to see that those similarities are happening today, and I think they are, and I believe it's disingenuous when political opponents here in the United States call those who disagree with them Nazis or Hitler. Even Obama, in Obama's case, I don't agree with that characterization, because the atrocities committed by the Nazis are in a class by themselves. Such labels are out of place in our political debate, and I agree with that. One of the things that I've seen, Joe, and folks, is I've seen, where are the statesmen? We don't have statesmen anymore. Where is the dignity of the American people? Where is the dignity of the individual? This is off script at all. We have lost our dignity. We have lost our decorum. We would much rather type something in on Facebook or on Twitter or whatever the flavor of the month is, and whatever the social networking is, and much rather live in that realm than talk face to face. Intellectual discourse, as far as I'm concerned, is in peril. And for one to, and this has nothing to do with this book, but this is just me speaking from the heart. I truly believe that the longer things go, and I believe that this is by design, the further down the road we get, we're going to see less and less social interaction. I think it's, again, by design, and more postings on Facebook and other social networking sites, mm-hmm. where the very people posting what they're posting would perhaps not say that to your face. Or if they did, they may word it a little bit differently. Or they might think twice about it. I see it as a massive tool for divisiveness, if you prefer. But just see, I think we are being socially engineered by those social networking sites. I think the Tavistock Institute, as the core, I think this is an experiment that really has found its place in society today. I think this is a massive success. I think this is social engineering. I think that's what this is all about. Now, I'm not saying to you, like Steve Quayle says, get off Facebook. Okay, I'm not saying that to you at all, because I do believe Facebook has a place. For example, we will use it to post information that's of interest to those people who follow us, right? I mean, fine. I'm not going to post what I had for lunch. No one wants to hear that. No one wants to hear about any of the other drivel that's on there. And few people really want to hear what the heck I might feel. No one cares. But you get these people. And Christians are guilty of this, I think. I think, personally. Christians are guilty of this just as much as anyone else. Of just, yip. To me, that's kind of, we got bigger problems to worry about, okay, than what is being discussed in that social realm there. We have to really get back to the basics and kind of be dignified. We got to find our decorum. In addition to finding our morality again as a nation, our spirituality as a nation, we also have to individually find our personal decorum. I think we also have to find our leaders who act more like statesmen than they do politicians. That's kind of what brought me to that. You know, when you look at the political theater today, you don't see statesmen anymore. You see politicians.
If you had to put a definition on the word statesman, what would you? How would you define it?
Wow. It's a good question. I believe it would be an individual, a statesman, a man. Now, that's not to...
Right.
Okay, a statesman who has, number one, the intellectual prowess, the understanding of the Constitution, the understanding of society, of people, and that can convey a thought as succinctly and directly as possible, and be able to move, garner a group, a diverse group of a population, lead by example, and someone who does not sit with their feet up on the desk. It's one of my pet peeves. Get your feet off the furniture. Ugh. You go on TV, dress up. Is that the best you can do? A quote wife beater shirt and a ponytail? Come on. Really? Or fix your hair. You might think these are all trivial. Show up on time. Are these all trivial things? Perhaps they are. But in totality, it shows what? It shows respect. Someone who has respect for the position, respect for those they serve, because the political leaders who are statesmen serve not themselves, but serve the people who put them there. That's my definition of a statesman. I don't know.
Okay. I just ask because I don't know if I've ever in my time seen a true statesman, or, you know,
I would say
my generation.
The closest
even,
one?
Yeah.
Probably Reagan. I mean, the closest.
And I don't even really remember him. But it's not something that you really hear about much. You don't hear the word used. You don't hear that term being used, especially in the arena of politics. So,
right.
Well, I had to ask because it's not something that...
it's not something we talk about. And you might think, you know, it's really not important, correct? Mm-hmm. But I think it is, because there's something about statesmanship. There's something about decorum, and even decorum amongst the body of the church, amongst the remnant. To me, it's important because, it just is. And you know what, folks? You feel free to disagree with me, but it just is. All right. I'm going to get into this, and I'm going to toss it to you. This is real quick. Again, citing Erwin Lutzer from his book "When a Nation Forgets God," and this I found pretty profound. And this kind of addresses an emailer's question, but it kind of strikes at the heart of where we are today. And a lot of people think of Hitler. Well, Hitler did not. I'll just say this: Hitler did not discourage people from attending church. He was a baptized Catholic who had long since abandoned Catholicism. He did not mind if others continued to attend church as long as by them attending church, it didn't affect the way they lived or the values that the values they held. In fact, Hitler explicitly said that he would not interfere with the specific doctrines of the church, just as long as the churches were teaching those things that were in harmony with the good of the German people. Okay, that's important now. He called this positive Christianity. And where have we heard this before? You see, the reason I'm bringing this up is we're being set up for this very issue. Hitler called this positive Christianity. Of course, he knew he would encounter some opposition from those who were not on board with his vision of a toothless, quote, positive Christianity. But he believed that he could crush any opposition he might encounter. And in effect, he did just that by intimidation and by controlling the salaries of the people of the churches, the ministers, the pastors. He controlled their salaries. You see, because Germany had a state church, the pastors, well, they were dependent on the government for their income. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people, you know, a lot of times, the money speaks louder than doctrine sometimes. Hitler ridiculed the Protestant pastors, saying that they were cowering dogs who would do his bidding for the sake of their miserable salaries. So, right from the start, Hitler sought to marginalize the church to guarantee that no Christian influence would be allowed to really infiltrate government policy. Worship would have to be a private matter between a man and his God. At all costs, the official state policy would have to be based on humanistic principles, on that positive Christianity, to give Hitler the freedom to do what was best for the country of Germany. He said that the churches must be forbidden from interfering with temporal matters. The state would have to be scrubbed clean from all Christian convictions and values. Don't you dare take a stand on issues of morality. I'm throwing that in there. Don't you dare take a position that would affect the church or affect the state. If you bring it here to today's church in America, I would translate it this way. Don't you dare not accept or be judgmental of the homosexual, the LGBT lobby. Don't you dare speak out against same-sex marriage. Don't you dare really bring the issue of abortion. Now, some churches, look, I'm not painting it with a broad brush, but you understand the churches that shy away from that controversy, and they all they want to talk about is if you pray hard enough, your faith will carry you, and you'll get rich. Send us money, you'll get rich. That's kind of the way it is. I mean, obviously, you know what I'm talking about. The Oprah church of everything. So, anyway, one of the issues that kind of struck me as well was Germans. For centuries, they had celebrated Christmas and Easter. Well, Hitler had to reinterpret their meaning. Christmas was turned into a totally pagan festival. This is not discussed, by the way, by Chris Putnam, but it's over here on Lutzer, with Lutzer. In fact, at least for the stormtroopers, the SS troops, Hitler made them celebrate Christmas on December 21st, the date of the winter solstice. That's where we get, or that's where some of this in European play gets, and in the pagan rituals. School prayers were banned. Huh.
Sound unfamiliar?
Yeah, and Christmas carols, nativity plays, they were forbidden in the schools, totally. 1938, even the name Christmas was changed to Yuletide. Man, are we reading about, is this Germany or is this the United States?
Sound very similar.
Exactly.
I mean, we've seen and covered on this show the, you know, nativity scenes being banned and outlawed at certain town and certain towns and municipalities. We've seen the Christmas, you know, being taken out of schools with Christmas carols not allowed to be sung and the renaming of the holiday.
Yep.
In universities. And, you know, the Fox News every year has their War on Christmas segments that they do. And Obama even mentioned the War on Christmas this year after not allowing the nativity scene and lights to be put up in Washington, D.C. for the first time in however many years. So,
you know,
he said, and he made a joke that he would win the War on Christmas. I don't know if you saw that earlier this year, or earlier this season. But it was in a YouTube video I saw. It was kind of a compilation video.
Well, there are Christians, Joe, and I got an email from somebody who said, if you put up a nativity scene, that's idolatry. If you have a statue or a crucifix, that's idolatry. Okay. I mean, I'm not even talking about a Christmas tree. I'm talking about a nativity scene. You put that up, it's idolatry. If you have a crucifix hanging on your wall, that's idolatry. If you have... and, of course, he's citing scripture. Now, we can argue all day long, or we could debate or talk about that all day long. Perhaps you might agree with that. Perhaps you might say, oh, I wouldn't have a nativity scene because that is considered biblically idolatry. But let me ask you a question. You want to debate about that, or you want to debate about, oh, I don't know, something that would, you know, something like the infiltration of ISIS here into not just the United States, but into the our position on homosexuality, or I mean, you want to talk about something a little bit more substantial than that? I guess choosing our battles because our time is short. The way I look at it is we have very little time because things are happening so fast. We don't know when things are going to reach a point where we're not going to be able to talk anymore. So what do you want to waste your breath on, or what do you want to invest your time in? Because you only have so much time. So you want to dedicate it to calling all Christians who have nativity scenes heretics, heresy? Or do you want to expand your reach a little bit more and discuss how people can get saved and what we need to do and how current events are emerging with biblical prophecy? Where do you want to spend your time? And that's kind of my thoughts. And I might lose people over that. And if that's the case, so be it. Does that make sense? Or is that, what do you think? I mean, do you agree or what?
Oh, man. I go back and forth myself with this, you know. Even leading up to this Christmas, I went back and forth on this issue in my own mind at least 100 times. And when looking at what's wrong with this country and what's wrong with our Christian population and where this disconnect is coming in, you know, we see the churches taking what is evil and promoting it as good and vice versa.
Right.
What is most important to cover on? Well, I think what you said at the beginning of the show, going back to the basics is where we need to start.
Right.
You know, being, you know, prayer, our relationship with Jesus and our relationship with other Christians here on earth. And as we get those back to the way the Lord showed us to be, how he showed us to behave and told us we need to act, then we can move on to other things. But I think we need to get our prayer lives in order. We need to get our own lives correct with the Lord before we go out to other people and our, you know, our outside and start poking around at that.
I agree. And I'd much rather, from my point of view, I'd much rather see a nativity scene in front of the White House and be called an idolater than nothing there or worse, you know, statue mm-hmm. of Baphomet or whatever, and be forced to bother that god, small g. All right. I'd much rather see a nativity scene and know it's there, not idolize them. Of course, I don't idolize statues or, you know, I don't get into that, but know it's there and a reminder of the time, the reminder of God's birth. I'd much rather see it there than not see it there. And because this is what Hitler did, and a lot of this, a lot of our thinking, the Christian's thinking, is really twisted by the Tavistock Institute and their U.S. corporations, MIT, RAND, Stanford, and so on. Okay, so a lot of this is influenced by a lot of what Christians believe, including this positive Christianity of Hitler, is influenced by and dictated by Tavistock Institute. You gotta understand Tavistock, because that's really a critical cauldron of Christian bashing and social engineering that results in Christian bashing. Anyway, real quick, some more. Hitler's real intentions, folks, we know what they were now, but they were not immediately revealed. Right after he was sworn in as chancellor, he paid tribute to Christianity as this essential element for safeguarding the soul of the German people. And he did that rather convincingly. He promised to respect the rights of the churches. He declared his ambitions to have a peaceful accord between the church and the state. Well, that's what he said anyway. He expressed his intentions to improve his relationship with Pope Pius the 12th. You remember, there's a book called The Nazi Pope, I think it is. I don't know. There's a lot of misinformation about Pius the 12th, and there's a lot of good research about it. You've got to understand where you got to be so careful today when you look at sources and information. You've got to weigh the information. I'm going to digress here a little bit because I want to cover this before I forget about this. We had a guest on not too long. Well, I shouldn't say not too long. We had a guest on several months ago. And I'm not going to name the guest, but it's a female, and she's at the center of this controversy, where I've gotten so many emails about her, saying she's a CIA agent, this and that, and she uses 38 aliases and so on and so forth. And it's really interesting because some of that's just not true. Some is true, and I knew about, but for cause. And when you say somebody uses alias, think of it this way. Somebody says, oh, he's got 38 aliases. Think of this. Think of the name John Schweidel Schuden. Okay.
Okay. Schweidel Schuden.
Yeah. Now, think of how many times that last name, that surname, could be misspelled. Each misspelling counts as an alias, even if it's unintentional. The name John, if suddenly somebody calls him Jack, or on some paper he writes Jack Schweidel Schuden, whatever, that's an alias. Okay. Considered an alias. If he uses a middle initial, that's an alias. Considered an alias. So be careful what you read about people on the internet. Be very slow to make judgments, and be very careful what you read. But the reason I brought that up is because I received quite a few emails about this female guest, and I'm thinking, man, you know. So the best way to do it is to ask the source, right? In addition, then verify the questions. We'll see. One of the things that we have instituted: no one comes on our show. If someone comes on our show and wants to use a pseudonym, we're okay with that, as long as we know the real name, the real address, the real phone number, the real marital status, the real name of the husband or wife, the real history. if that person, as long as we know that and we can verify it, and we can say, okay, well, you know, fine. So generally speaking, if a person wants to come on and not use their name or use a pseudonym, that's our criteria. As long as we know what the real, who the real person is and verified it, and there's a legitimate reason for using a pseudonym. Okay? Because sometimes there are. I don't know why I brought that up at that moment, but it doesn't matter. But, alright. I guess I brought that up because there's a lot of misinformation. Oh, I was talking about Pope Pius the 12th, and there's a lot of misinformation about the Pope. There's a lot of good information about it. There's a lot of lies that are mixed in with truths, and the best place to hide a lie is between two truths, of course. Yep. You know, and it's perfect. So, you know, when you read things and when you, it's very important to really get the correct historical aspect of things. But anyway, Hitler was willing to give the churches freedom, he said, as long as they did not do anything subversive to the state. And by subversive to the state, and I'm going to end at this point, by being subversive to the state, it means that, for example, you don't criticize the state. You don't criticize the policies of the Hitler administration. Okay? Does this sound familiar? You don't criticize anything that they're doing. You don't make the church real. You can talk about things that, but you don't talk about the real things that could change things. Article 24 of the party platform of Hitler's platform demanded liberty for all religious denominations in the state so far as they are not a danger to the moral feelings of the German race. Hitler spoke approvingly of his positive Christianity that would contribute to the German struggle. He won some pretty goodwill, pretty much goodwill, by the use of the words freedom and tolerance. Are we getting this yet? He assured them, the German people, the churches, that he was doing what was best for Germany. But of course, what was best was defined by Hitler, not by the Christians. The parallels, ladies and gentlemen, are there. The reason I'm bringing this out is, you know, we've got to understand that we are right now, we have the fertile ground for this very takeover. We're seeing it happen right now. The leaps are not that big. And I think people must realize what we're seeing. We will end up, and people must realize that the goal of the power elite, the globalist, is to create one religion. That's a state religion. What Hitler did, that is a combination of Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. That does not involve Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Oh, he's a historical figure. In fact, I can guarantee you his place will be that of a prophet who has a lineage that can be traced through the Merovingian bloodline that will birth the so-called Antichrist, result in that. This is what I believe personally, based on my research. And that's what I think this one world religion is going to consist of, is this distillation of the three monotheistic religions. The acceptance of Islam, the acceptance of Christianity, the acceptance of Judaism, but a perverted doctrine of all three. And Jesus Christ, his place, historical only, and the Merovingian bloodline, big prophet, and of course that will produce the so-called Antichrist, proven through DNA findings, which is why the blood is so important, which is why intellectual discussion about DNA is so important. It's not necessary. That's important. And that's why we talk about the blood. That's why we talk about DNA. That's why we talk about even Nazi Germany. That's why we talk about all of this, because all of these are pieces that are necessary to understand the threat. I'm going to close there. And that, folks, concludes my opening statement.
All right. Well, we do have a lot of news to get into today. And we're going to be taking your calls in the end of the second and the third hour also on this show. As we have, as my dad said, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday this week, and then Thursday and Friday, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, we will be off, and then we'll be back in full swing the following week. But yesterday was a very odd day, yesterday and this weekend, for storms.
Yes.
Floods and tornadoes killed at least 43 people in the southern and midwest United States during the Christmas holidays, with forecasters warning that blizzards and freezing rains would add to the misery on Monday. Hundreds of people in Texas were struggling to rebuild homes damaged or destroyed by rare yet extremely powerful December twisters, as residents of Alabama and Florida were warned they could be next. There were so many planes down. I think there was over 1,000 planes delayed and 1,600 or canceled and 1,600 more delayed.
Yep.
Yeah, over the U.S., that was just over this weekend, after millions have been trying to get home from their Christmas, were stranded by bad weather or grounded flights. Officials pleaded with people to be wary of flash flooding, especially down in Missouri and Mississippi. But one of the hardest-hit transportation hubs was Chicago, where 450 flights were grounded. And the National Weather Service said more than 20 states, from Texas to as far north as east as Maine, were under a weather watch or a warning, for over a foot of snow was expected in some areas, and flash flooding and freezing rain in others. Now, in the last 2 days here, it went from being 60 degrees every day and nice to, you know, 35 and freezing rain.
I was actually wearing Speedos.
I didn't want to get out of bed this morning. It was bad. Yesterday and today were dark, gloomy, cold, and lots of freezing rain. But this powerful storm was fueled by unseasonably warm air, which began in the deep south Wednesday. It already dumped as much as 41 inches of snow in parts of New Mexico and 10 inches of rain in Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, according to the Weather Service. Now, there was the Texas tornado, which killed 11 people over the weekend.
There were 4 dead in Garland.
Yeah. Garland was one of the biggest areas hit. That was the hardest hit, was the Dallas suburb of Garland. Authorities confirmed 8 fatalities after a tornado packing winds up to 200 miles an hour bore down on the city. And this was the second time since 1950 that a tornado as powerful as yesterday hit.
Now, do you believe in spot judgments there? Because Garland hosted the pro-Islamic, pro-Muslim deal. Anyway.
I don't know. I wanted to ask Stan, because Stan has been telling us about this El Nino weather cycle and how... what to expect, this over the last few months on our show, and, you know, from judging the weather temperatures, water temperatures and their rise and the anomalies that he saw a few months back, he concluded that this was an El Nino and that we were going to have a very, hectic, weather situation.
But who's to say,
I understand.
Who's to say God didn't create the El Nino, you know, to...
Right. You know, I don't think that's something we can determine on this side. But this is definitely an extraordinary weather event that is not a normal thing. Especially, I mean, you go in Texas for 48 hours from tornadoes to 15 inches of snow expected in the panhandle now.
Yeah.
From the Mississippi and Missouri River overflowing and creating flash floods. I mean, it's pretty intense bad weather.
This is not new, all right? And I would suggest that a lot of this, Joe, the weather changes, where this comes into relevance today for the listeners today. And by the way, I did contact our friends, American Survival Wholesale, you know, outside of Dallas, and J.B. Wells. J.B. Wells was only 20 miles southwest, I think southwest of where the fiercest tornado touched down in Texas, but they're okay.
No damage?
No. John Wells is okay and his family. American Survival Wholesale is okay. So I just to you know, assure people listening. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to toss in Steve Quayle was on Alex Jones today talking about the Empire Beneath the Ice, but okay, and Nazis as well. But going back to what you're saying, the weather... Look, I don't think this is anything new. I do think this is a product of geoengineering, a lot of product of aerial spraying. And I saw, a forum and people on the forum saying that aerial spraying to spread chemicals in the atmosphere, couldn't be done because at least to make any effect on the climate, it would take too much chemicals.
Yeah.
Too many, too much of a quantity. Dane Wigington would be the guy.
Geoengineeringwatch.org. Yeah.
Right.
And,
he's a guy that we would turn to for information like that.
And I've seen hearings in the House and,
yep.
From the Senate on cloud seeding and geoengineering and the mentioning of bringing heavy metal aerosol sprays into the mix for reflecting sunlight and other purposes pertaining to climate change.
Right.
So these plans have been in the works for decades. So to say it's impossible or it wouldn't affect anything, I think is people's opinion of what they hoped it was or what it could be.
Huh.
Because the government doesn't think so. And
when you say the government doesn't think so, the government is telling people what?
Well, the government is conducting these cloud seeding geoengineering programs.
Correct.
They have been spraying, these heavy metals in very small quantities in the what we see as chemtrails and what people will call contrails. But I think, if you just look up cloud seeding and geoengineering
right.
from John Holdren and their work, there's a lot that has been done that has been put into action. And you can watch hearings about different agencies in the government conducting these tests and what their findings have been.
Well, one thing I just want to mention this. I had the occasion. I found a box. We're still unpacking things, it seems like. And we had, from our move back in May, I found a box of old pictures. When I say old pictures, I'm talking pictures back from the 50s and 60s of my family that they had taken. Many of them were outside. For some reason, my dad and my mom liked to take pictures of people outside, apparently. And a lot had the skies. Now, what I found interesting was they're black and white photographs, but I didn't see any of the chemtrails or even contrails in the sky. Now, one can make the argument, that's because the planes weren't flying like they are today, with so many and different aircraft, but, it's just weird. All of the photographs, I'll have to show you, Joe, because it is really kind of involves your dad's yeah. side of the family, or my side of the family. I thought it was pretty interesting to look at the sky pictures.
Yeah.
And not see any of this. There are reasons for that, but.
And I hope and urge people, who have old photos like that to go through them and to do your own checking and see if anything, you find anything.
Yeah,
and we'd be interested.
The 70s,
yeah. I'd be interested to be wrong about it. There's a lot more to it than that, but just to cover our basis, anybody who has a collection of old pictures, especially that have been outside, to look at the sun, to see how we know the advancements in technology allow us to take much clearer and more,
right.
better resolution with pictures, and we didn't have that ability years ago, but you can still learn or gain a lot by looking at pictures. From back then.
Right. And you can also, you can. I was trying to fit in a reason to use the acronym or the abbreviation DVD player. I was going to say you can always put your old pictures on the digital VD player. I just keep wanting to say that joke. I don't know. It just cracks me up. But sometimes we just have to be light, All right.
Yeah, we have a few seconds till our break here, and we're going to come back on the other side. We're going to get into some more news. State Department counts bringing peace to Syria as a 2015 win, mm-hmm. as well as some other things in there that just got to laugh about. I don't know what else you'd say about it except what world do they live in? they list at the end of the article a number of accomplishments, which... I don't know how they can claim credit.
Full Metal Jacket was on this past weekend, and the sanitized version, the cleaned up version. I happened to catch maybe the last third of it. It was very interesting. Anyway, it kind of speaks to what's going on. Go ahead.
We'll be right back after these short messages. Stay with us on this December 28th broadcast of the Hagman and Hagman Report.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.